Hello and welcome to the Ski Racing Podcast with me, Ed Drake. Ben and Marcella here again. It's three on the trot for those boys, but we've also got a special guest. Mr. Nick Fellows is joining us on the pod. Nick, thank you very much for joining us. We have got an action-packed schedule to review. There were four races over in Wengen, two downhills, a Super G and a slalom, and they were all pretty epic, as well as the three very, very interesting races over in Zaukensee Altmark. It was an absolute fantastic track as ever down there. One of the best on the World Cup Tour for the women. Plus, looking ahead to a hectic schedule coming up this week, we are going to say hello and welcome to Nick. Nick, obviously, well documented now, you sort of moved away from Eurosport and commentary for the moment and taken a very important role over at the Fizz. Tell us more, will you?
Yes, I'm absolutely delighted, honoured, actually, to have been appointed the director of FIS TV and very much getting involved in the development of the sport. The FIS are looking to centralise all of their sports marketing rights. And it'll be the first time ever since the 60s that the FIS can actually shape its sport with the better of sport at the forefront of their strategy. We have these big marketing agencies that are involved. You may have heard the names before, Infront and Endeavor and IMG. And basically, these are sports marketing agencies that whilst they do a lot of good work for the sport, they're looking to make money out of it. And what this has sort of meant is that there are lots of countries across the world that are unable to watch World Cup skiing because their broadcasters, the TV channels that deliver it to us week in, week out, can't afford to buy the rights. And these agencies say, if you don't want to pay, then you're not going to play. And therefore, what we're doing at the moment with FIS TV is developing into what we call the dark markets in a soft launch process. And we are testing some new technology. But most importantly, if you're stuck in the middle of Australia, or can you believe it? You live in New Zealand and you can't watch Alice Robinson on the TV. You live in Canada. They have World Super G champions and you can't watch ski racing on the TV in Canada. Now, we know Eurosport do a great job wrapping up most of the key areas over here, but there are a lot of countries that complain. So first part of the job is to make sure that you can watch ski racing any place, anywhere in the world. Second part of the job is to develop a strategy where FIS TV will bring you more content. I want viewers to be able to tune into our website, click on FIS TV, sign in free of charge, and watch the training runs. I've just come back from the team captains meeting in Kitzbühel, figuring out how we're going to film Marcus Vallner and all of the world's best coaches working out how the first training run here in Kitzbühel is going to work. So we have a lot to work on, a lot to develop. But after the 2026 Olympics, the FIS will own its marketing and TV rights. And we will work very closely with the big boys, ORF. You'll still see Shemi on Ski Sunday, but you can only see six Ski Sundays. And so you'll be able to watch everything in and around the BBC, for example. And it will only be an English service. So we won't be locking horns with Austrian television or Swiss television. But most importantly for me, it's to give more information, more detail. I want to see the training runs. I want to go backstage. I want to see Marcel's dad servicing the skis. I want to see more and more of our sport. And we totally respect at the FIS that the golden hour of the big downhill that's coming this weekend is very important to a lot of TV stations. They will be our partners. But if you want to watch all the other stuff, catch up, maybe watch the training runs to get your top three predictions correct, then FIS TV will be there to give it to you. Every race, everything you can possibly imagine. And I've got 3 years to build the team, build the strategy, get it right.
Mate, it sounds like a massive project to squeeze in 3 years. It sounds really, really cool, really interesting. I mean, obviously, us and those listening, the ski racing fans, you know, I can't wait to have more information, be able to see stuff. You know, you don't have to watch it from start to finish, but to be able to tune in, yeah, get into a meeting, hear about what they're talking about with the safety. Obviously, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on with with all the stuff that went on over in Wengen. But yeah, to have, you know, to have all of that info and available, and fingers crossed it is free, but you know, all that sort of stuff sounds amazing.
And of course, for the athletes themselves, and they're the most important part of the equation here, it's giving their sponsors more airtime. It's giving them more exposure. They'll have more opportunities to talk. We'll learn more about how the French ski team works. We'll go backstage with the Austrians and the Norwegians. We'll learn more about the managers. We'll learn more about a newly developed constructors championship that we'll be working on, where all of a sudden the ski industry gets a chance to make something back from the huge input that they put in. I'll make Marcus Wallner a TV celebrity, but so will be Leo Mussi, the famous serviceman from Fisher. So, and if you calculate that, we have 13 disciplines in the FIS family. So the Nordic guys will get their fair share. If you want to go Nordic, you want to go park and pipe, you want to go freestyle. And then, of course, like you guys as well, I'm a commentator, and I want to be able to build one of the best commentary teams in the world that gives our world feed value and educate our skiers. So it's a big project. It's a great project, but we'll have it up and running by 27. And I think it won't harm any of the major broadcasters, but it will complement and give a real service to winter sports fans.
Sounds wicked. Sounds wicked. Yeah, definitely looking forward to that, especially as, you know, none of us, bar maybe Marcel, have been to a World Cup in for a very, very long time. So if nothing else, at least we can live vicariously.
I feel like this almost sounds like better for, you know, you get all the drive to survive or whatever era we'll call it. But I feel like if you constantly have that, you know, background knowledge, I think that makes such a huge difference, because you watch Drive to Survive. I just actually started the Breakpoint. What is it called? Breakpoint. But it's nice, you know, but you get like 6 episodes or whatever, or 8 episodes, and then it's done. And then you're like, so what I'm going to do now? So I'm not going to, you know, get any information for the next 10 months. So it's quite, I think that's quite a great idea to have all of that, you know, constantly. Maybe during the summer, I guess, as well, you probably will go to like trainings and stuff, I assume.
Yes, and I think I'm hoping it then gives us a greater focus on maybe changing the format of some of the events and trying to make them a little more exciting by introducing a qualification round. So the last training run on a Thursday or a Friday would mean that instead of having 91, 81 starters, you've actually got a quali round like Formula One, which has proved very successful, and therefore only the top 50 are allowed to race the big day on Saturday. And so when you've got content to provide, then you shape that content so it's more entertaining and more giving more to the fans. So qualification, I think, could be an idea that we could develop, change the format of the downhill racing. It can generally be over by number 30. Let's spice it up a little bit. Let's change it around. Top 30 reverse for slaloms and giant slaloms is a great hit. But there's never been a burning desire to change those kind of things because nobody really watches it. But now all of a sudden we've got a platform where people can watch it. Then maybe that will inspire the constituent members or the national ski associations to say, okay, let's get all the committees back together and change how we race downhill or change how we race Super G. And I think FIS TV will help the sport develop. We're celebrating FIS 100th anniversary this year, and I think it'll help spur on the next 100 years.
Yeah, because, I mean, Odomat won the first downhill from Bib 8. Sarrazin won it from Bib 3. On the Friday's race. So all of a sudden, yeah, the races were...
You remember they did like the reverse starting one, didn't they? Like once it was like people started with Bib 30 when they were like the best in the world, and then all the way down. I think it's probably a bit unfair for the races, I guess. That's why they changed it.
Yeah, they were a lot of complaining, I think, when that used to happen.
I thought it was quite fun because I remember Bodie Miller, he tried to... I think he was a training run in Bormio maybe or something like that, and he tried to be really slow so he could start up front, but then he was like 31st.
Yeah, I remember that. Love little tactics. No, I think it's really cool. No, I think it's really cool. And also, like, to get in on the, you know, on the meetings and stuff, Nick, that you were at last this evening. I think, you know, that's obviously an extra interesting thing. And we'll move on to it now, obviously, with the accidents that happened over the weekend in Wengen on the end of last week, that, you know, people scrambling around for information, and generally there isn't enough information coming out. So people start clutching at straws and they start, you know, essentially making stuff up, or, you know, some artistic license of what's going on, because there's very little information coming out. That means that, you know, everything is a little bit more clearer and hopefully a little less fighting, you know, in terms of the, like you already said, these sort of sensationalized articles and comments, and which you don't need. Nobody needs.
I mean, I think FIS TV will allow us to be more transparent, and it'll open up the sport. It is transparent. It's just that you don't see it. And, you know, it was, like I said earlier, very interesting talking to Marcus Waldner, who's the chief race director for all the men's races. And Marcus saying that, you know, it was originally the skiers themselves that were pushing to reschedule all of the cancelled races. All of a sudden, you start rescheduling, and then you think, wow, three speed races back to back in Wengen, a 4 kilometer racetrack. And you think, my goodness, whose idea was that? And so the inevitable will happen, but we'll also have crashes in downhills where there's only one event. So I think it would be great to go backstage more and more with ski racing, so people can realize that they don't make it up as they go along. It's thought through very carefully, but the requests and wishes of the athletes are always adhered to. And if they're pushing to have two downhills cancelled in Beaver Creek, rescheduled, then the FIS will listen to the athletes. And of course, very sadly, Pantereau and Kilda came out worst on the topic.
Well, yeah, well, Ben, you were saying just before we came on air, weren't you, in terms of we've been talking about it for a long time. And so a lot of people, when it comes to the overall globes, all of a sudden, you know, this season for the men, there are 24 tech events, so slalom and giant slaloms, and 21 speed events. So if we didn't reschedule the two races from Zermatt-Cavigna, the two races from Beaver, or the three races from Beaver Creek, all of a sudden, your speed racer is never going to win the overall because they've never had the opportunity. The women's across the board is 22 and 22. They got 11 in each of the categories, which I think obviously is the most fair. But yeah, if you didn't reschedule those races, you know, is Odemat going to still win the overall? Probably, because the guy's got a ridiculous win percentage and point scoring record. But a normal person that normally races speed wouldn't.
Yeah, agreed. I think the extra discipline that Odemat's doing is really helping him. And the fact that he wins pretty much every race he's doing at the moment also helps. But you're right, Ed. We've had the discussion pre-season about how to try and make the overall more fair. And, you know, it's really unfortunate that we had to cancel the races, largely due to weather conditions. And as Nick was saying, the racers want to race. But unfortunately, when it's a speed race, you have to be putting them in where you can do training runs. And, you know, Marcel's talked about how expensive it is for resorts to put on races when you've got to have the amount of netting and security up for a World Cup downhill or Super G, and, you know, helicopters and all else on standby. The only way you can put those races in is if you put them in an existing race weekend. They can't pull a weekend out of thin air and have a resort ready to go. So it's really difficult for the organisers to do. And like you said, the racers want to race and they want the points. But unfortunately, there are some weekends, perhaps Wengen's one of the ones where you do say, OK, perhaps two downhills and the Super Gs in 3 days is a bit too much. And maybe there are other resorts that are slightly less strenuous on the athletes to do. But it's certainly something we'll work out how to fix at some point. But by the sounds of it, there's going to be some great content based on what Nick's been saying. And I think we could watch or have all of the information available. I don't think it would improve our picks, I'll be honest. I'm still going to watch it all, but our picks aren't going to get any better, I don't think.
I'm not sure if you need the podcast then anymore.
Yeah, being put out of business.
If you need a ski racing FIS podcast, just let us know.
Yeah, enough rubbish.
We will.
But yeah, on the sort of injury side, I think great to see actually Kilda's injury maybe didn't look as bad as it first had seemed. There were a lot of stories going around that it was a compound fracture with bone out of the skin. Not to say that just a cut through the calf is okay, but it's certainly a lot better than having a bone sticking out of his leg. So dislocated shoulder, big cut in his leg. Real shame, obviously. But you could see, Marcel, you and I, and welcome to the commentary box, by the way, mate, and you absolutely smashed it, I think. Kilda, you could see Kilda that happening from the Silverhorn jump. He really looked absolutely goosed coming into that jump and coming into the Austrian hole. He nearly stuck it in the nets there, and then through the ZLS, really struggled and obviously just didn't have anything left. And I think that's probably, a healthy Kilda has no issues there. But the fact that is he's been battling with this cold that obviously Michaela Schifrin had that kept her away from racing means that he just had absolutely nothing left. So I think that was a pretty big result. Pantero, great to see. Again, so little information was coming out on both of those big crashes that everybody was sort of scrabbling around trying to figure out. Thankfully, Pantero obviously came off a little bit worse, potentially with the busted ACL. And did he break his wrist? I think he did break his wrist, didn't he? Broke his wrist. So that's pretty bad. And then Collar as well. The first day, the Swiss racer did his knee as well, which actually he did his knee racing there as a forerunner. And it was his other knee. I was trying to work out whether and the doctors apparently said that they never thought he would race again. So I'm not sure whether it's good that it's his other knee or if it's bad that it's his other knee. So I'm not sure which way I sort of feel it's on that one. Yep. What's that?
It's even now.
two bad knees. But, you know, the guys put themselves on the line. But that's downhill racing, isn't it? That's what these guys all know. That's what they expect. And you can guarantee there's no way Kilda was not going to race. There's no way that he wasn't going to push out the start gate because he felt a bit tired on the last day. Some nice reports coming out of it. Nick, have you guys heard anything? Obviously, I'm sure that was a bit of a bit of a part of the chat this evening at the meeting.
Yeah, the official word on Pantero surgery, private hospital in Lyon, suffering from a cruciate ligament rupture and damage to the medial meniscus of his left knee. Doesn't say anything on the report that I've got here on his wrist. And I think Kilda, again, tired, not feeling a little ill, but you have to remember that he'd been third in the two races that had already happened. So he's after it. He thinks he can win it. If you've come third in the short track downhill, you've come third in the Super G. Adrenaline can take over control of your body in so many ways. And I totally agree with you, Ed. You know, he looked like he was done coming into the ZLS. And for us as commentators, that's such a surprise because the power play in the closeout is really his calling card. And so that's why I think people started really thinking the worst after the crash, because we were all so shocked. But you can't stop an athlete having another downhill race when he's come third in the two before. Kilda genuinely thought he was going to win that day. And he's also under a little bit of pressure, isn't he, now from Odomat as well. Odomat is just, as all you guys said earlier, smashing it. 7 wins in one season, something crazy like that. But most importantly, Kilda's having his turf torn up, not only by Odomat, but by Sarrazin now as well.
Yeah, real threats from the field.
He hasn't had that for a couple of years, has he? He's sort of been the man. Okay, Odie, you have the GS races. Okay, Marco, you have the Super Gs. And he's getting it from all angles. Now there's two new kids on the block in the downhill chase. Everybody wants the individual discipline downhill globe. So I think Kilda all of a sudden is in unfamiliar territory where he's pushing himself that little bit more where maybe he doesn't need to. And boom, into the net he goes. I just have a question for you guys, actually. Will he be back this season if it's just a cut to his calf and a bashed-in shoulder, or is that him done for the tour?
No, they said today, I think the Norwegian doctor came out and said he's done for the season. He's not gonna do any more racing.
Okay.
But obviously not quite the same depth of cut by... surely can't be, because Because Innerhofer was back. He had a decent cut in his leg, didn't he? In Bormio, stitches in the next day. And then the guy's race, you know, not quite obviously the same, but he was racing stitches in his leg. Absolute crazy, man.
Yeah, they're tough.
But I think, I also think, obviously, the last day, I have a question for you about that. But, you know, I feel like Pinto, that was just his own, it was his own mistake, pretty clearly, because everyone else had, some sort of issue sometimes, but not really. And that was clearly his mistake. And the Kohler, I didn't see that crash, but, you know, I would assume it probably was a normal crash and it was the first downhill anyway. But I just, you know, I don't think there was something extraordinary, bar maybe the fact that everyone was a bit tired at the second race. But other than that, I mean, you know, they've done everything they could, and the course was incredible. Like, it looked so much fun to ski, slalomed as well for once in Wengen. So I you know, I don't think there was anything wrong with that. The only thing I would say, and that really shocked me when Ed and I watched it on commentary, the guy, Norwegian guy who crashed and almost strangled himself, I think that was horrendous. That should have not been happening.
Yeah, Fossland. What's his name?
Yeah, Fossland, you're right.
Yeah, got caught up in the yellow net. There was a bit, the yellow sort of sponsorship net that was a bit higher, and he sort of hung by his neck. I assume that will never happen again, because I doubt those types of banners will be used. But again, that was pretty scary. But that is an excellent point. I think all of those crashes, none of those were down to the course or the conditions. It was just down. It was down to pilot error. I mean, Pantereau went in a little bit direct, but that was the action plan of the French team, didn't you think, Ben? In terms of, they were going very direct into the Silverhorn jump. Pantereau went very direct, but because he went so direct, he was still pressuring the ski on that lip, and then he got into the back seat, and then obviously he was just trying to get his way around that gate and ended up losing his balance and going down. But I don't think any of them were down to the piece. Although annoyingly, which I don't like, was the fact that they started then shaving the jump afterwards, after there'd been like six guys already down there. And it wasn't to do with the jump, but they obviously, hang on a minute, just in case, we'll shave it down.
Yeah, it always looks bad when someone has a crash on one of those jumps. And like I think you probably said a few times over the weekend on commentary, when people get pushed back when they're still pressing on the ski when they take off, is one of the worst things you can be doing. And if you're trying to complete your turn because you know you've got to cut it really tight as you're approaching what you know is the roll, you're like, do I hang on, do I back off, you know, is it worth it? And like, similar to what you said with Kilder, you know, Pantereau was going really well, he was going really fast, he would have felt like he was on a good run, he was like, I'm gonna try and ride this speed out, if I check and cut all the speed off, that's my chances over for the day. I've got to keep pushing. And
he had a great result the day before, so you're right.
Similarly, that same mentality we talked about with Kilder. When you're on form, you back yourself to get out of the trouble you're getting yourself into and hold the speed. And those speed disciplines, we talked about it before, about, you know, how long do you continue to risk the line to carry the speed? And yeah, he, you know, it was obviously a horrible crash and really unfortunate, but he knew what he was doing when he tried it, and it just didn't quite work. I mean, like you said, I thought the conditions were absolutely incredible. In Wengen, it looked amazing. And Sarrazin, I mean, I think a few races have put down, you know, we all know what we're doing, we all take these risks. I mean, Sarrazin took so many risks this weekend. Some of his line choices were outrageous. and just the speed he was carrying, you could see it took absolutely everything Odermatt had to stay in front of him each day. And they looked like they absolutely enjoyed the hell out of the battle they had with each other. But like you said, the French were picked a couple points to really cut the line. And, you know, every run Sarrazin did this weekend, I think I had my heart in my mouth on two or three occasions. It was like kind of Pete Goggia, but almost twice the speed or whatever, because you're going down Wengen, bits of Wengen. I think the section at the top, I think it's a Canadian corner, that bit, every day the speeds through there, whether it was the Super G or the downhill, was insane. I don't know how some of the people held on to that. It looked like it was getting a bit more bumpy each day. I don't know how they held on. But yeah, I think all round the weekend racing, and certainly all those speed events in Wengen looked incredible.
Audemars just on another planet, though, and just the confidence you could see it going into the Kernanesnik, the way that he just, you know, everybody else was doing some sort of shimmy or some sort of power plow. Audemars, he did do a shimmy, but it was just about getting the weight transfer, wasn't it, onto that new outside ski. It wasn't about braking. He wasn't trying to slow himself down. He was just like, I just need a little bit of a push from my right foot to hit my left with all the pace, and then just knife those two. It was some watch, though, wasn't it?
That was brilliant. And, you know, it's an athlete at the top of his game, confidence at an all-time high. And where others, you know, I mean, the viewers and the number of text messages and emails, why are they snow plowing? What are they doing that for? I mean, I learned that when I was a beginner, because they're actually a little nervous that they're not going to bend that ski around that chicane or the Kernanes, of course. And you're so right with your words, is that Audemars comes charging in, knowing exactly where he wants to be, when he wants to pressure, edge, and guide the ski through the turn. His awareness of where he is at what part of it is quite special. Obviously, his technique is a cut above the rest of the world right now. But I think it was Marcel that said, is that, you know, Sarrazin comes to the table, tries to make it even more engaging, and then he seems to find a little bit more to stop the Frenchman taking control of the whole weekend in Wengen. And so I think it's marvellous. It's what ski sport is all about.
Yeah.
But I think that you could clearly see in the downhill, he's had a few equipment changes, a few setup changes, that he can now turn his downhill skis the way he can his giant slalom skis. And I heard from one of the Swiss journalists that was one of the sort of the keys to success and the keys to opening up the lock of his downhill performances. And we all knew it, really, that when he'd won his first downhill, then that was it. There would be no stopping him. And then here he is now. He's probably going to win the two downhills here in Kitzbühel. And his technique and this amazing balance and timing that he has stops him from going down. You think he's going to fall,
yeah,
and then all of a sudden he's already loaded the new turn and gone around the next corner. So he's quite extraordinary, but as Ben says, you know, it just makes for fantastic ski racing. Really good.
Yes, and thankfully we have got Sarrazin up there as well, because otherwise it would have been relatively pedestrian, because, you know, nobody apart from they were just under a second inside. Kilda was third, 0.81 off, and then Shida was fourth, 0.94 off. Other than that, nobody was within a second of Audemars apart from Sarrazin all weekend long. So thankfully, Sarrazin did come to the party. But that Kernanes, that just quickly, that turn, it is mad, absolutely mad. 60 miles an hour, and you're tucking in. It's like 3 meters wide. You can't see the apex of the exit turn to that chicane. So all you're doing is tucking, looking at a net in front of you and a wall of snow on your right-hand side and a load of netting on your left. And you're just trusting that you know where you're going to start your turn to be able to eventually, when it does come into view, pick out the apex of the exit turn and then hope that you've got on the edge early enough to not hit the air fence on the outside. And if you do, you may as well take your skis off and get the train that's going above your head, get back to the top, get your stuff and sod off, because game's done. It's a wicked turn. Just one of those turns that, a bit like in Formula One, you know, the likes of Monaco or some of these classic tracks that would never be there. You would never create a Wengen now, and you couldn't. And somebody somewhere put a rule up, showed the FIS's rules for buffers of vertical drop for Super Gs. And Wengen's like an extra 200 meter vertical drop than it's even within FIS's parameters of what they're allowed to do. So, you know, these iconic slopes will just never be built again. So, you know, it's flipping amazing. We're not going to go through each of the results, but a couple of points I'd like to quiz you guys on. Obviously, Kilda is now done by the sounds of it for this season, but thankfully with something that in theory he should recover with very little long-term side effects to, hopefully. But the likes of Paris, are we seeing a little bit of Paris's resurgence? Yes, fifth in the first, fourth in the Super G, third in the second downhill. Yes, a bit further off the pace, but is that a bit of Paris coming back to the floor? Marcel, what do you think, bud?
Well, as far as I remember the commentary, I said he's doing damage control.
I think you also called him, what did you call him?
Big boy.
He carries a few extra kilos. I think you were dancing around the fact that you were trying to tell me he was a big bastard that should be using a weight advantage.
No, I think that was a good result for him. But I mean, the distance was so far behind him. When he came to the finish, he was like, "What the hell have I done?" Like 2 seconds off, and then he got the third. So that's great for him. So it's you know what I like about the French? They're technically really solid. So I think that's a good, you know, it's a good thing, because I think that's what the Austrians are lacking. Maybe if you have time, Nikki, I don't know if you heard anything about them, but that was one thing that I was a bit shocked about, really.
Dominic Paris, you were shocked, or?
No, the Austrians. What did you hear about them?
Yeah, I mean, you know better than anybody, when the press start going against them, they are horrible. Already the press are starting to pile the pressure on Invengen, because they know Kitzbühel is the following weekend. So I think they're getting a bit of a bumpy ride and getting criticised unnecessarily. I think also that you're starting to see that as the major players leave, they miss them. And I think Meyer being an example, Priekmaer's feeling a little bit lonely on his own. And then the doom and gloom starts to kick in. You pick up the newspaper, they hate you. You open up your computer, social media hates you. And then you go to the bottom of the mountain, and then the coach hates you. And so I think that they're going through that period where it's a little bit of a slim team, as in there's not many of them. I think that they're starting to lose confidence and self-belief. And it gets to the point, didn't he, where Maya had the meltdown last year. And I think that Kriegmeier is going, it almost looks like he's not enjoying being on the mountain. And I think that it's a bigger problem for the Austrians. If it weren't for Manu Feller, they would be screaming crisis, crisis, crisis. And Marcel, you've been on the World Cup tour when they've been, you know, making those screams. And so I think that they will need to dust themselves down, pick themselves up. If you win here in Kitzbühel, you're a legend for the rest of your life. But if it goes badly, like this downward spiral seems to continue, then they're in trouble, the men. Fortunately, the women are holding their own and picking it up. A coach that I like from Austria, looking after the ladies very closely, Herbert Mandel. And I think Mandel is doing a good job. But is it Marco Pfiffner? Pfeiffner? How do you pronounce his name? Pfeiffer. Marco Pfeiffer. He's getting sucked into the downward gloom as well. And he picks up his mobile phone, opens his laptop, and they hate him. And so I think they've got to really pick themselves up this weekend. Otherwise, those headlines will become even more difficult for the athletes to shake down.
Ben, what did you make of Sjerestad's run?
Oh, no, which race?
On the last day. You know, with all the stuff with dealing with Kilder, having that massive crash, huge delays. He's had more than his fair share, far more than his fair share of injuries. And I know that is a cliche, but that is 100% true of him. And then to come down and put in a performance like that under that mental stress, and probably what has to be a lack of confidence due to the fact that he's not had great results so far this season on the comeback from the multiple injuries, to do that, I think it was flipping epic. What do you reckon?
Yeah, he had a great run. And like you said, with the number of crashes and the number of delays and those kind of things, we've talked about that a bunch in terms of how much it plays on your mind. But all of the races have got to have a coping mechanism for when that happens, for how they kind of get out of race mode and then back into it when they need to. But it's always worse when it's your teammate. I mean, I'm not in downhill, but I've had it where people I trained with were going down and they crashed, and then, you know, even if they're completely fine, you're like, what happened? Where did it happen? You know, do I need to, you know, can I focus on my race properly about it? And he just managed to, I don't know what he did to like put all of that to the back of his mind, but he really did, because he looked like the guy that I think a few years ago we were saying, this could be a guy to really come and kind of push Kilder in that team the way. other people had done before and have that kind of good speed training group that we're so familiar with the Norwegians having these days. Obviously we see it a lot more in the tech side with the Norwegians having a bunch, but a few years ago it looked like Sørensen and Kilde were going to be, you know, dominating the tour for a long time to come. So it was great to see him put in a full performance to show he's still there, especially under such difficult conditions. Like you said, with all of the delays. I mean, he was still a long way back, but like we said, everyone was this weekend after Odermatt and Sarrazin.
Yeah, those guys were on top of the world. Just one last bit of info, unless anybody wants to add anything. The first race was won by 0.58. The second race was won by 0.58. And the third race was won by 0.59. I don't know what the odds on something like that happening, Mar, but that was just a weird sort of kaleidoscope of stuff coming together. Very, very strange. But yeah, all in all, if you could just forget about the injuries, I think it was an amazing weekend, and the organizers did a fantastic job because it was an epic challenge and it was all about the races. It was all on the hill for them to win. Yes, it was difficult through Canadian Corner with that left foot of how ripply it was, but that's the mountain. You know, that's how it happens with the snow. There was a lot of complaints before they raced about how that they'd watered the Kerness, but the organizers worked really, really hard, and you couldn't tell that there'd been a load of hoo-ha about that corner, that sort of section either. So all in all, it was cracking. And then we had the slalom on the Sunday, which was another brilliant day. And I think, Marcel, you already said already today about how good the snow was. And it's been a long time. I can't even remember the last time we've had such good snow for the slalom. All I can remember is warm slalom conditions where there's load of ruts. They're talking about salting already because the sun normally beats down on that hill and makes it very, very soft. But Fella, unbelievable yet again. McGrath looked a little salty, having to settle for second for the second time in succession. Christofferson looked a lot more excited, a lot more positive about hit the rest of his season, finishing in third. Clement, well, that second run was epic, and you hope, I mean, how many times have we said it, that that is the start of something better from him, because his inconsistency has got to be crippling him. And Maillard did very, very well as well. Nick, mate, what did you think about that slalom? Because it was some of the best we've seen for a long, long time.
Yeah, crackerjack, you know, absolutely crackerjack. Slalom skiing at its best. My favorite part of the race, I actually thought McGrath had got it, and it shows that your point is right on point, is that, you know, Manu Fella absolutely nailed that second run. But I overheard the conversation whilst we were waiting for the prize giving on FIS TV. And there's Christofferson having a little bit of a sort of a dig, like he does, you know, and he gets a little bit grumpy and moany. And he's saying to Manu Fella, he says, "I just the way you ski," he said, "you don't care about your equipment, you don't think about anything. And all I think about is where my bindings are, how my skis are tuned, and you're just one of those guys that just smashes down the mountain. Manu, it's just not fair the way you are." And Manu Fella just turns around to him very calmly and coolly, he says, "You just want to chill out, Henrik. Just chill out."
Brilliant.
Oh, and it was so good. And I had to turn my mic off to stop my chuckle alive on air. But no, fantastic. Slalom tour's holding its own. You know, they often play second fiddle. I believe that's why the piste can get so shitty in Wengen for slalom, because they spend all their time and effort getting that bloody, whatever it is, 4 kilometer long track sorted out. They go, "Oh, we forgot to do the slalom track." And so I think that beautiful snow conditions, beautiful skiing from so many. And what I enjoyed as well is that the rhythm on the top part of the track, lots of different skiers really showed us some beautiful style, technique, and skillful slalom racing. And there were some great stories, but Fella basically outskied the Vikings, and he did it in style. And I think it's the only thing that the Austrians have to cheer about right now. And what do they call him? The Ragga Man. He's into, you know, he likes his ragga. He's got his dreadlocks, so he's a bit of a different character, which I find very nice as well. And he winds up Henrik Christophersen. That makes it even funny.
Marcel, let's go to you with the Austrian flavor, because It's been 4 from 4 from the Austrian ski team on the slalom tour, 3 for Feller, 1 for Schwarz. And yeah, that is the beacon that the Austrian men's ski team have got to be holding on to at the moment to try and, you know, prove that we got some good results.
Yeah, I don't know if they've, even with Hirsch, I'm not sure if they've won 4 in a row. Like that is very unique that they win all of the races. But I thought it was great. I mean, you can just, you know, the confidence he has whenever he puts the pressure at a point, he just doesn't hold, you know, he has the perfect timing, so he doesn't need to hold back. You could see with some people, they have to like go 2 or 3 times into the turn, and he just doesn't. And that's why he's so quick. And that last roller, that was so crucial for that race. Like that was literally deciding to win or not. And he did it just fantastic. I mean,
he did it most of it on his inside skis, didn't he, in the end? Yeah,
my God, his reaction was so quick, actually. But I think, you know, as Nick said, it was great to see people coming from like higher bibs and stuff because they never really get the chance to do that. And this is one of the races, and you could see a lot of people took their chance because of a lot of people crashed in first round, didn't finish or straddled or whatever. But it was similar in downhill as well. You know, like while people probably complain about, you know, is this necessary to have another race? The guys who score points, they will have those points. And it was the same in slalom. You know, you got to take those chances that you get. And some people really did. And I was very happy to watch that race, actually. One of the best slaloms I've seen in a long time. It was very interesting.
Ben, what did you make of it, mate? One of the comments I loved overhearing Christofferson talk about, and actually he even said it a couple of times on microphone, was apparently now you don't want a low bib number in slalom. That's actually a disadvantage to ski down on a nice, smooth track.
Yeah, you can ask him to have that discussion with Dave because he just keeps getting the shoddiest draws on a weekly basis. Every time we see a bib draw, Dave's either 14 or 15. He needs a favour some point soon to try and get drawn like 8 or 9 or something. But you guys have said it. It was a brilliant race. Matty Feller's just his attitude, like Nick touched on. Yes, he's got the brilliant skills, but he also doesn't care if he skis out. We've said before in the past, if he's in a run of skiing out, it looks like it's starting to bother him because he knows he's kind of dropping off the pace and the leaderboard. Whereas when it's going for him, you know, Christofferson's thinking about everything. Feller's just thinking about executing that turn. Where am I starting it? Where am I finishing it? And when it works, it's absolutely lightning fast. And that's what it was. And we saw a bit of it from Noel on his second run. It looked like he'd cleared his head and just went, I'm going to go as fast as I possibly can. And then you and Marcel nearly choked a couple of times on commentary, especially when they showed the slow-mo of his tip just drifting past the outside. And I'm millimeters in that by, and I think you saw it live, and then in the replay it was even closer than you thought first up. That's the margins these guys are playing with. So when you do get the straddles, you're like, oh, you know, why are they doing that? And it's because they have to push that hard to beat each other, so you have to take that level of risk. And I think there are a couple of really great performances, like Marcel said, from the higher bib numbers. Stephen Amier is really exciting to watch ski. I can't wait to see what he looks like when he starts dropping his bib number. Croatianist Raid has had a pretty blinding slalom day as well. Was hoping for a tiny bit more from Dave. I thought that second run was kind of set up for a bit of a Dave charge. The way the course was set, there were some really kind of wide swinging turns in that he seems to take advantage of on those rollers from time to time. But it didn't look like he quite found the rhythm on the second run that he wanted. But I mean, again, you know, it's pretty good in his career if we get to the point of him coming joint 12 and it being a bit of a letdown, like, a you know, 5 years ago, that would have been a solid performance. We'd have been really happy for him. So, like, he's continuing to rack up points this year, and I think if he can have a really big day in Kitzbühel and Schladming, we'll be getting, I guess, massively excited for him again.
Yeah, and I don't think you can actually underestimate how important that was after how difficult Adelboden was for him. You know, two very solid runs, and yes, solid is not what we need to see from Dave anymore, and what we hope to see from Dave anymore, because we're past that and he's past that, and he's, you know, latter end of his career, he doesn't want to be skiing solid anymore. But what that does do is, meaning when he goes into Kitzbühel, he's feeling good again. He's feeling like he knows what his skis are doing, because he talked about in Adelboden not really feeling what was going underneath him. His legs felt very strange and just not getting that rhythm at all. But then the fact that he's had a World Cup where yes, it wasn't his best ever World Cup, but it was his second, I think it was tied second best result in Wengen, to build that, have that going into Kitzbühel, where he's due a good result, he's due a good a bib draw, all of that sort of stuff. You know, I know we're sort of getting I'm getting ahead of myself ever so slightly, but I think that's really, it was really important for him to have two solid, quick solid runs and moving into there. And then Billy looked absolutely next level. That first run, he looked like he was skiing like fourth gear as well. It didn't even look like he was on the limit whatsoever. And I think we've touched on it before, but him, and hopefully it'll start rubbing off a bit more on Laurie, but certainly Billy, he's getting that metronomic slalom style that we're so used to seeing from Dave. And Billy is now starting to be able to fine tune that into pushing a bit harder and for it to still look quite easy for him. And for him to be 16th first run, drop a couple places on the second run, didn't quite get the pace of it on the second run either. Maybe the Brits didn't quite get the course read right. But those two boys, I think, were, you know, Dave was very good. And I think Billy was excellent. What do you make of it, Nick?
I think you made a very valid point. I think it's a perfect and beautiful setup for Dave. It's never been a happy hunting ground for him, has it really, the Mannlicher piece? As you mentioned, his PB there is eighth. And then the 12th position matches another 12th position. And there is best results over the past 10 years. So I spoke to him on the phone, funnily enough, this afternoon. We had a few things to catch up on. We kept missing each other. And he was pretty pleased, his words were. So I think your judgment and your call on it being a lovely little building block to come here to the Ganslern of Kitzbühel is spot on. And as for Billy Major, yeah, it's good. Second result, 16 and now 18. I think the battle for Billy, as it is for so many of the young slalom races, is proving to themselves more than anything else that they can crack it. Marcel knows more than any of us on this subject. But the demons are in their own heads. The coaches know they can do it. All four of us on this podcast know they can do it. The only person that it needs to be proved to is themselves. And I think Billy's getting very close to that point where he goes home after the race and says, I think I deserve to be here. And let's have it on. And he's ready to roll his sleeves up and rumble with those big guys. But I think it takes two or three good, solid top 20 results before that self-belief arrives. So for British Ski Racing fans, time's ahead. Woohoo! Don't forget to tune into you guys this Sunday, because it could be a whopper.
Ben, how do you think Laurie picks himself up over a couple of disappointing outings, and how best do you think he can write it?
I thought, to be honest, I was a bit more confident in his skiing this weekend than in the last couple of slaloms we've seen. I thought he was gonna get it down, put it in the finish on that run. It looked like he'd got past the toughest sections, and he was carrying some really good speed. Like, his first couple of splits were really nice, and he didn't look too reckless on the steep, which is normally where he goes in full pace, sits back a bit and just hopes. Whereas this time he did the hardest part, and it almost looked like he relaxed coming into the dip. And then when the next roll came is when he just got off balance and couldn't hang on. So if I was in the team with him, I'd say, you know, the next couple pistes are a lot less complicated to deal with than Wengen. So I'd say keep doing what you're doing. I Marcel mentioned it on commentary, and we've said similar things about Charlie on the GS before. When you're starting that far back, things really need to line up for you to hit that 30. So if there are any, you know, Europa Cups in the next couple of few weeks, try and get in those and get that start number down, so that you're starting closer to Billy, like in the mid to late 30s, and then you've got a much better chance and much more margin for error for making it, rather than 40s and 50s, where it is a bit more of a crapshoot, even when the snow conditions are solid.
Yeah, it's not often that it stays as good as it did. With, I think there were only 38 finishes, I think, or something crazy in that slalom, because we had so many DNFs. But he, you know, in January, it's really difficult at this point as well to try and fight. Do you take a step away? You know, you've got Kitzbühel, Schladming, and then it's Chamonix. You know, he's quick. The thing is, he's so quick. He's quick enough, definitely quick enough. But that higher bib, as you say, is just absolutely keeping him back where he is and make him struggle with his finishes, where he feels like he probably has to push beyond the limit. You know, Sarrazin talked about it being able to, you know, he'd ski 100%, and even at the bottom of the run, I think Sarrazin said he slackened off. He skied at 90% and still came second when he in that first downhill. So yes, obviously that is a very luxurious place to live when you can ski at 90% and still be on a podium or second or win. But when you are starting that far back, the only option is to go full charge in what's usually bad conditions relatively. So I think it's really difficult. But yeah, I hope, I haven't spoken to him, but I really hope that he's mentally in a good place in terms of like the ability to still charge, because is that 3 DNFs on the bounce? Second run, anyway, with that second run in Gurgel, anyway, where he struggled. So yeah, it could be tough for him, but let's see.
Well, the thing is, you know, I guess because he's British, he's in a more favorable position to just step away for one or two races. Because if he would be Austrian, like there wouldn't be a chance in hell that he could, you know, just step away and go to European Cup. And I feel like it might be good for him to be potentially separated with Billy, because they're obviously the same age, you know. Billy is now, and I don't want to say overtaken him, but kind of has, with his results at least. And I feel like taking him away for a couple European Cup races, getting some confidence in, because he has done good on, I think he got third or something on, or fourth on a European Cup race in December. So I think that would be potentially good for him. And, you know, if you're in Billy's position, you have two top 20 results, you start 32 for the whole year, and you know, having probably secured already his points for next year with those results, it's so good, because two or three people or four people always crash, you ski to your ability and you're basically in. So that's, you know, it's so much better than
pressure, much less pressure.
There's much less pressure because he knows, you know, I've secured my bib for next year, even though even if I don't make it in top 30 this year, I still, you know, can charge from those kind of bibs. And I think that is a much more favorable position. And I remember when he was the other way around, when Laurie was actually skiing with earlier bibs than Billy in the beginning. And I think it's, you know, he potentially should be doing that. And other people should be doing that as well. With bigger nations, it's basically impossible to do that. However, I want to point someone out. Philip's, what's his name? Sudral. You couldn't pronounce it.
I really struggled to that.
I want our listeners to listen to this story. Austria ski team has someone in there who's never done a European Cup race. He's like 18 years old, won a fist race, boom, into the World Cup team, which I thought was fascinating. And he has actually done pretty well.
And he looked like he belonged there, didn't he? He skied well.
I mean, he was, I think he was, what, 6/10 behind on the second intermediate? Which would have easily been the second run. You know, he made a couple of big mistakes and crashed in the end. But I mean, I hope they're going to let him ski Kitzbühel as well, because he well deserved that.
That would never have happened before, would it? Never.
I remember the first time I did the qualification for Solden. I actually hadn't done a European Cup at that stage, but I didn't qualify in the end. But there were 27 people for one or two spots. And what they did at the ski team was, you whatever your world ranking was, you got like a 10th per gate or a 500th per gate. So you had to literally be miles quicker than everyone else to get a spot. First time I rocked up, I mean, I was second and third in both runs. But I mean, at the end, I was about 2 seconds behind because my fist points were so shit.
Yeah, they don't have those luxuries anymore at the moment. I think at the moment their depth may not quite be as good as it did be in your day, mate, I think. Gents, anything to add on the men's side before we look across at the women's? Anything that we've missed? Well, the women over in Altmark-Zakopane had an absolute cracking time. That hill is exceptional. There's so much terrain, big jumps, high speed, technical turns. They ran two Super Gs in a downhill, Super G. Hooter on the first day absolutely smashed it, got the job done. Kajavikov Lee of the Norwegian team was in second, Gut Barami third, Brignoni was fourth. It was a pretty, you know, the snow looked epic again. It looked really, really tidy. Ben, why don't you kick us off with this one, buddy? What did you make of that one?
I mean, with some of what Nick was saying earlier on about having kind of more content, this weekend would have been the weekend for it because both sets of races were just the pace looked great, the conditions looked great, the racing was awesome, and that, like you touched on it at the start, Outermark Zalkensee is easily one of the best hills on the women's tour. We talked before about how good it is they've left Maribor and start skiing on the proper hills in Slovenia. This one, I just love the start. It's just straight out, straight into the shit. It looked so much fun. And then really technical in the middle is what I really, really enjoyed. Some of the turns, like the Austrians had a really good 3 days, and I feel like their knowledge of how to handle that kind of lower, probably like third quarter of the hill, looked like it paid off every single day. They appeared to be like just racking up time on everyone else. Even the likes of Godja, it's not very often we see people get within a tenth of her in a downhill, but Stephanie Vanier was there in the downhill trying to keep it as close as she could. So I really enjoyed some of the speed, some of the jumps. A little bit gutted at the end of the weekend. I think it was pretty high, blustery winds at the top on the last day, and Godja was a bit mad that they'd kind of taken them round the side of some of the jumps because she wanted to go full pelt and proper go over the jumps as well in true Godja fashion. So it was absolutely brilliant, Ed. I really, really enjoyed watching those races. And yeah, I think it was a big one for Godja because I think she came out afterwards. She was quite emotional afterwards because I think she's crashed there a lot before. She said she didn't have like a podium to her name in that resort. And then again, because she's got you, the podium she does get is a win. So I think it really took a, it meant a lot, and it took a lot for her to get that win.
It was you're, I think you've nailed it with the fact that the Austrians did do so well. It's not like, you know, it's not like they've not done well there before through the speed tour, but there they really did nail it. And I think there's so much terrain there. I've raced European Cup there a few times. There's so much terrain to deal with. There's so many blind gates and cambers and all that sort of stuff that home field advantage, if there was ever a hill that it makes a big difference. It's got to be that one because there's so much going on. But they absolutely nailed it. But again, the course workers obviously worked their backsides off because it was pristine from start to finish. But it's dark as well down there. I mean, you know, that you really have to be properly brave and properly confident because the minute you in that on that hill, the minute you come off the gas, the minute you just second guess yourself rolling up into a turn over a blind crest. You know, you're done. There's no chance because it's everything's coming at you so quick. Nick, what are your highlights of those races, mate?
Yeah, I'm with Ben actually. I thought it was clearly an emotional performance for Godja. You know, that she was wearing her heart on her sleeve, wasn't she? Crying in front of the TV cameras, and a victory that she'd never had before. It was common knowledge for many that the Austrian team had been training on the racetrack before Christmas. So it wasn't such a huge surprise for me to see the likes of Conny Hüther and the other Austrian girls claim spots on the podium. Highlight for me, Cooper Army, 40th World Cup victory in shitty conditions. Really sort of the race jury, Peter Gerdell and his team, as Ben pointed out again, just wanting to play a little caution, didn't want to, because they all know it's a spicy downhill, no question of a doubt. And I think the way Gut Bahrami used her skiing skills to win that Super G, the second Super G, of course, on the last day of racing, I thought that was very clever race execution from Gut Bahrami. I really liked the way she skied that out. All of the other girls know that the Austrian team had been training on the track as well. So they know that they're sort of slightly off the pace before they even get going. So I was really impressed with Gut Bahrami's 40th win. And I agree with all the guys. You know, I agree with everybody. Altenmarte has to go in this cycle of hosting races, doesn't it? It doesn't get it every year. It gets it every other year, sharing a little bit with St. Anton and some of the others. And I think they put on a great show. They really did. Women's speed skiing at its best last weekend.
Marcel, your Austrian again hat on. The likes of on the downhill day on the Saturday, Godja won in front of Vanir by a tenth, and then a tie with Puchner in third, again from Austria, but Nicole Delago back on a podium. I can't remember what the stat is of how long she's not been on a podium, but to see her back on a podium was pretty epic.
No, I think it was great racing. And also, I mean, I just agree with everything you said. Agree, not disagree. I think we talked about that quite a few times. The Austrians, they seem to be very good to have top 10s, but not, you know, the top results. And I guess having that training, and you know that, we all know it's a big advantage, but it's fair enough. It's home field advantage. The Swiss have it somewhere else potentially. So I think that really tipped them over to having a fantastic weekend. I cannot remember the last time we saw that many Austrians on a podium, and I don't think they can either. So that was really good. That was really good. And that would have taken a lot of pressure off, because so far, you know, they, Hüther was great so far, but the rest, they just, you know, have top 10, top 15. But as Nick said, the press is, you know, relentless in Austria. They will not be happy with that. So good for them. You know, made the most of it. I think they should have it in the calendar every year. And I bet the Austrians would love to chug in St. Anton as well, somewhere else, and then potentially some other tracks, because they love to have them as much as possible. But no, that was a really good weekend. Really enjoyed it.
Well, I think, you know, that the point you're making about the tracks is important. And yes, Ben, we already talked about it last week when they ditched Semmering. Well, not Semmering. Where was it? Maribor for Kranjska Gora. We've now got this downhill, a real downhill on the tour. Kvitfjell, you know, the former men's, it's still a men's downhill, but they're on the track for the women as well. These proper downhills where the women get to show that they can handle big jumps, high speeds, big terrain, steeps, not just these flat slopes that they get, you know, oh, we'll do it here because, you know, Maribor needs a race, they don't have a race or whatever, like just putting them in because, oh, we should put them in. No, let's put in the proper ones and see the best. Like when we saw the women race in Schladming a couple of seasons, was it last year or the year before the women raced in Schladming for the slalom? Two seasons ago. You know, that was brilliant. And it was some of the best skiing that we've seen. You know, yes, we do get treated to, you know, the likes of Lahova and Schifrin doing battle week in, week out in the Santor. But the piece was a part of that story because of the tale of how good they were doing. So I think all of those points are really, really good. And Gut Bahrami, I'm so pleased that she is enjoying her ski racing, because if she wasn't enjoying it, I was going to say at her age, which is a bit disrespectful, but, you know, when she's a little more experienced than some of the other racers, that, you know, if she's not enjoying it, there's no way she'd be there. And I think the sport's better for it. She's pushing people. Yes, she's not as consistent all the time that she would like. You know, sometimes she goes off the boil and it feels like it's just not my day. I'm not really that bothered, whatever. I'll bring it for the next day. But her skiing at the moment is really, really good. What do you reckon, Nick? Anything to add on that?
Yeah, she's a great character. You know, but she's one of those ladies that's been on the tour for over a decade at the top of her game. You name it, she's won it. And I actually see that as one of her skills. If she has a tough day in the office, forget it, move forwards. And if it weren't for Michaela winning so many races, Schifrin would be on the verge now. Gut Bahrami would be on the verge now of getting closer to some of those old historical records that Lindsay and Michaela smashed. And I kind of think she's very cool. I really do think she's very cool. And she's, as you quite rightly say, she's good for the sport. And watch out, I think she's got quite a few more wins yet to go this season.
Well, she's been battling. Her, you know, when she burst onto the scene, when she was first around, beating Lindsay Vonn, then, you know, she's lived through a pretty tough existence in terms of some of the biggest names that ski racing's seen and still sees, with Schifrin obviously still going. So, yeah, great to see she's still there. But obviously a shame that Schifrin wasn't there. This was the type of hill. And obviously that's the reason that the Schifrin camp is so good at targeting races, aren't they? They're very good at picking what sort of suits Michaela's skill set. And then obviously they hone in on those and go at them full bore. Obviously with the illness, decided to take a step back. And the hindsight, again, with what happened to Kilder obviously didn't feel like he could, because he's not dominant this season, where he couldn't take his foot off the gas. He had to go and play when he was maybe feeling a bit under the weather. Shiffrin obviously doesn't have that same sort of pressure, could take a little bit of time away and try to relax. And obviously then she flew in to go and see Alex in hospital, understandably, and then now she's flown back and will be on the hill tomorrow evening in Flachau. But a shame, because Shiffrin at her best, again, another spicy player into the mix of those downhills as well. But yeah, Kasia Vikhov-Lee had a massive crash, didn't she, on that downhill. Somehow, I have absolutely no idea how her legs are still attached, because off of that jump, Marcel, we watched it, didn't we? Sat by side by side, and her feet and skis stayed on and just spun, and you're like, that's it, we're in for a big delay here. And all of a sudden she just sort of like stood up, like dusted her legs off and was like, no, I'm fine, waved to the, you know, the TV camera, and then skied off. You're like, what on earth, how does she do that?
Well, not only that, but then she came back and raced on the Sunday as well, and came 14th, which obviously isn't as well as she would have necessarily would have wanted, but she was still in 0.7 off the win. So for someone as well, we talked about Smyth Seristead coming back from lots of injuries. You know, Kasia Vikhov-Lee's had a bunch of horrible injuries as well. To go to podium, big crash, and then come back the next day and still really put it on the line shows, I mean, incredible mental strength as well. And yeah, I was thinking the same thing when that crash happened as well. There were a few this weekend that, you know, you don't like seeing crashes, but you like seeing the kind of speed and excitement. And like we said at the start, like seeing the racers test themselves against these, you know, these quality hills at really high speed.
Have we got anything else to add on the women's side? Have we missed anything? No. Ben, you usually like to chuck in something random. No?
Let's go for the USA on the final day, the second Super G. The young Lauren Macuga, I'm not sure if that's how you say it, started 48, came into to top 10. That's a phenomenal performance as well. And again, you think if you get within point, you know, six of Gupta Army and the Super G, you might be on the podium, but unfortunately they're all so closely packed in that it was just a top 10. But I think we've covered it. Obviously, there's been so many races. If we went into detail on all of them, we'd probably still be here tomorrow morning.
But to your point about the Americans, look at, is that, you know, a spin-off of the AJ Hurt? Look how well she's done, bounced in really young. All of a sudden, the American team is skiing well, with Paula Maltzan going well in the first run of whichever slalom it was the other week, going really well, obviously fell on the second run. They're obviously skiing, AJ Hurt obviously flying, picking up a podium, and then that Macuga picking it up there. All of us, again, this whole team morale, obviously booming. Michaela Shiffrin is obviously a big part of that. And she sort of, I don't think dips in and dips out, because obviously she's part of it, but also her own team. But just being able to be in the same sphere as Shiffrin is really rubbing off on some of these youngsters. I haven't got the full results in front of me for the women, but I think there was another couple of good performances in from the Americans so far this weekend as well. And it's great to see that it isn't just the Shiffrin show for the American team. Again, we nearly saw it. I know we're going to dip back to the men, but how fast was River Radamus on that second run? On the first run of that slalom day, he was bang on to get in for another second run again. That confidence from him is just mad, and that then rubbed off on is rubbing off on his GS as well. Like, all that stuff's going really cool. So the American team is flying, and I think we should take some points out of that, because Tilston has got to have some. He's definitely having something to do with that. So we're claiming, we do a lot of claiming the Brits because we need to, but we'll claim some of the American glory, I think.
I think it was Isabella Wright and Jacqueline Wiles were the other two. They had good days, I think, on the downhill day. But yeah, obviously it's great. Like we've said it before, when the American team is good, the sport's more exciting. Just the bringing like a big group of racers over, it just brings more eyes. Obviously, Shiffrin is incredible for the sport, but having other names there as well that people get to recognise and cheer for is great. And it's almost like they've got their own little kind of cheer squad following the tour around the way. Vlahova's got her own kind of like massive army of fans that follow around. It's great. You could just take a winter season off and just go kind of talk, follow the kind of European part of the World Cup tour, and it'd be awesome fun.
One last thing before we move off, because there's something I forgot to mention. Marcel, you did a little bit of maths this morning, and I'm sure it probably hurt your brain. So I want to make sure that you've been able to get your sums in here with how well Odomat is doing so far this season, because his points percentage, if you think the record setting year he did last year was good, how's it shaping up?
Yeah, so last year he had, I can't remember exact name, but exact number, but it was 2,046, I think, 46 points. And he had an average of 73.3 up until after Wengen. This year he has 84.66. There had been less races, so last year he had about 100 points more, but obviously he's literally 84.66 points, like on average, which basically means that he needs to be more than second on every race, which is quite good. He literally only had podiums bar one race where he got seventh, which was in Gruden, where he had a pretty bad day for him in the office. Other than that, only wins and seconds, basically.
That's mad. Average of, and that's probably a better win percent. That's probably a better points percentage than Michaela as well, actually.
That is better than her. And I actually did. What did I say this morning to you? I think it was if he would continue this form, he would be on the way to 2,400 points, more than 2,400 points.
Ridiculous.
And then
Absolutely.
he might start some slalom as well. So, you know,
Just because he
he's
could.
coming. Schladming and Kitzbühel. Can you imagine seeing him at the start? Everyone would be like, shit, what's he doing now here? Not really.
Just go, well, I can, so I will. Right, so this coming week is very, very busy. Flachau is Tuesday night, and by the time most of you listen to this, it will be today. So just to bring you up to date, if you haven't done your picks, you can head over to the Instagram. There is a link for the Flachau picks page on its own. Ben, remind us of our picks for this one.
I have Vlahova, Marcel had Michaela Schifrin, and Edgy had Leila Dewar.
Nick, who are you going to be backing? Who do you think is going to get it done over in Flachau? Feel free to double up on any of whoever's you want to.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see somebody different win it, you know, big crowds, big prize money. It would be lovely to somebody to get back into and spice up the women's slalom tour even more. So I'm going to go really off-piste here, and I'm going to go with Leonsberger.
Well, I mean, the Austrians would lose their mind. And if anybody's made a, you know, Teflon with stuff just bouncing off of her, with all bad press, it's Leonsberger. She seems to just always ski with a smile on her face. Doesn't go that well. She sort of smiles, shrugs, and leaves again. And all of a sudden, she's back there.
That was part of a very controversial, very con that was very controversial last year when she was always laughing at the end, and the press was like, "Why the hell is she always laughing? Like she skis like shit. Why is she laughing still?" So that was one thing that they were obviously she explained it in during the summer and this and that, but I don't think that went down too well when she was not doing great.
Yeah.
Well, if you don't laugh, you cry. If they're on you, what do they want you? Just to be in floods of
Well,
tears, right?
I actually think they would rather want you to see, you know, want you to cry. Just be like, I'm so sorry.
No, you just keep smiling, Leesburg. That's fine. Don't you worry
Yeah.
about
Fine.
people wanting you to cry on TV.
Yeah, screw those guys. Okay, so then we move on to Kitzbühel for the men, and it is downhill Friday, downhill Saturday, slalom Sunday, and then they hot foot it over to Schladming for GS on Tuesday, and Wednesday it is the night slalom. So a busy set of races for the men. And so we're just going to get picking. We're going to try and rattle through these quite quickly. Nick, as you are our special, extra special guest, who are you going to call for Friday's downhill? And is it going to be a, it's not going to be shortened downhill because it's not a replacement, is it? So it's going to be two full length downhills.
Yeah, two full length downhills. It'll be very icy. It'll be very quick after that rainy day that's forecast here on Thursday.
Sorry, is it same prize money for both of the downhills as well? Are they sort of on par?
Yeah, I took a screenshot today actually. It's 100 grand for the winner, 50 grand for the second, 25 for the third, and then it obviously goes down. And it's the same for slalom, both downhills and slalom.
All right. Sorry, Nick. Yeah, go on. Keep going, mate.
Perfect. I mean, so basically based on Marcel's calculations there, these are really simple predictions for Kitzbühel. 200 grand in the bank for Odermatt doing the double downhill in Kitzbühel and
Bosh.
100 grand for Dave riding to take back home to Lancashire.
Oosh. Right, like that, just like that. Ben, what do you think, mate?
Are we is everyone on the board,
I
or
think
is it getting to the point
I
now
think
where
everybody's
Odermatt
on the
has to
Gordon.
start getting kicked off the options list? No, based on the way this weekend's gone, I want to see if Sarrazin can keep those risks for another week. So I'll go Sarrazin for the first downhill.
What about the second? Go on, what you can rattle through.
Okay, Paris number two.
Ooh, nice, I like it.
And then slalom, I'm going to stick with Fella, seeing as he's getting me loads of points so far.
Marcel?
No, you go first, and you actually need to think about
Oh, all right.
it.
All right. I think the first downhill. Oh, do you know what? I'd love to see Kriegsma just pull it out of the bag. But do I genuinely think he's going to be able to do that? Oh, he's not showed an awful lot. I am going to go. I think I might join Nick with an Odermatt race one, and then I'm going to go off piste, and I'm going to go Schieder race two. Technical, he might find his feet on the first one, and then he's going to go, all right, I've got this now, and I'm going to smash that second race. So Schieder for race two, and then slalom. Oh,
Don't say Noel. Don't say Noel.
I can't. I just can't. I just can't say Noel. But I'm going to go. I'm going to stick with McGrath. I think, I picked him for the win last time. He's been pretty close, and if he doesn't win, I think he's gonna absolutely lose it. Which
Gonna be
so
a
either
full
way, I'll be so yeah.
Christofferson,
So either way, I'm going to be happy because
you
he's either going to win or he's going to
reckon?
absolutely blow his top. So it's going to be all gravy for me. Marcel, come on then, mate. No more thinking from you, mate. I can see the steam.
I go for Kriechmeier on the first race, and then I go for Sehrstedt on the second race. However, do I get like a pick back if he crashes? Because he's a bit of a crash pilot
If
sometimes.
he nails himself in the first race, you can have a backup pick for his second race.
Fine, I'll pick him for the second race then. And then I go for, I'd like to say Feller actually. But Feller has a really not a great track record in Kitzbühel. I think he was leading a couple of times, or at least once last year, I remember, and he crashed. So I go for Clément
Whoa. You're feeling dangerous. He's feeling well risky. Okay, so on to the GS over in Schladming. Right, I think we're gonna have to test our we're gonna test our knowledge a little bit. We're gonna take Odermatt off the table because we all think Odermatt's gonna win. Let's look at the race for second. Who do we think is going to be first behind Odermatt? Marcel, mate, who do you think should be first behind Odermatt?
I think Cranias. I would like to pick me because that's my favorite race, but I say Cranias.
Okay. Ben.
He hasn't shown us much. But I'm going to say Christofferson. I think that confidence he would have taken from last weekend might help.
Certainly getting to grips with the equipment a bit better, isn't he? Nick, what do you think?
I'd like to tell your viewers that I actually commentated on the Austrian gentleman on this podcast at this race. And is that one of the ones you won, Marcel?
Third. But
Third.
that was the race, the only race in my life that I ever heard people scream. Like
Yeah.
when you dive into that last, steep bit, my God, that still
You
gives me
could.
goosebumps. Like, now, one thing I never forget in my life.
Yeah, and the other guy seemed so much more powerful than you, but you had that lovely little skillful touch on your skis. I remember commentating on you. It was
I wonder where that's gone.
But for again, Schladming, it's a tricky race. A lot of piste, a lot of terrain. And as Marcel so quite rightly says, the crowd is huge, and it can have an effect on a negative, or it can really boost you. Am I allowed to pick the same as somebody else?
Yeah, go for it. Do it. Do what you
Because
like, mate.
you remember when they were throwing snowballs at Henrik Kristoffersen in Schladming, and I don't think he's forgotten that. And so I think he's going to win the giant slalom. I'm with Ben on this one. I think that Kristoffersen trying to get his revenge on the snowball throwers.
Okie dokie. I think I'm going to go Zubcic. He has been, it's obviously been a resurgence of form with how well he's done in Alta Badia, but also, it should be bulletproof icy there, and that guy has got some power and some explosive style to his skiing. I would really actually like to see Luke Meyer doing well again. I think he actually won there, didn't he, last year? But I can't. I just think Zubcic is going to get it. Luke Meyer, I'd like to see him. He'll feel good going in after fifth place in slalom, obviously, last time on Sunday. But yeah, I think he's going to get it done. Okay, and slalom, Nick, slalom. What are you thinking?
Yeah, Albert Popov.
Well, I like it because he's done really well there. Is
He
that where
was
his
so
PB
good in
is?
Wengen. He was so good in Wengen.
Yep, they haven't won a Bulgaria hasn't won a World Cup since Peter Popangelov in 1978. Marcel, do you remember Popangelov, or are you too young?
1978. No, I'm too young for
I
that.
was in
But
kindergarten.
he's famous. Like, I've obviously heard of him. Mainly because of you, Nick, because you have mentioned him a couple of times. But
Yeah, he was one of my heroes when I was a kid.
seriously, Popov, he would have been very much up there in Wengen already, and he's really looking like to get in there now. I think he's so solid. Sometimes a bit too much left and right, but good job.
Marcel?
I think I'd love to see Linus Strasser do well, actually, because Felix Neureuther was always very good in Schladming, and they love the Germans there as well. So Linus Strasser is going to get it, and he was good in Wengen too.
Ben?
I think this is probably going to be the one where I say something silly like Noel for this one. I feel like all of the other DNFs will be out of his system by then, and that'll be the one where he absolutely nails it.
So you're going to get,
I'm
and
under the
then
most amount of pressure possible, with flares going off all over the place and snowballs flying. That's when he's going to turn it on.
and I'm going to go Feller because I think he's just on that hill. It's going to mean so much to the guy. You saw how much it meant for him to do well in Adelboden, about how it meant to him. He likes the big races. He likes the big occasions, and I think that is going to be the one that is he is going to put absolutely it all on the line, if he already doesn't, but certainly that one. So he's going to be mine. And the women this weekend, a much slimmer program for them this coming weekend. They are in Jasna in Slovakia for a Tech Weekend GS Saturday, slalom on Sunday. And it is going to be, I think it's quite cold over there at the moment. I haven't actually seen the forecast for this weekend, but last year, well, I think ran really well, and Vlahova was, thankfully for the Slovakian fans, on tremendous form. So let's see what she can do this weekend. Do you think anyone thinks she's going to get it done in the GS? Gonna be tough to get it done in the GS. No, shakes of heads, shakes of heads. Okay, so GS, Ben, women's picks, please. Where are you going? Who do you think?
I'm sticking with my new rule of no more Tessa Worley, so Brignone is my new GS pick by absolute default. And she's been skiing GS really well this year, so it's gonna, I think her style pretty much suits any hill on any snow, so I'm pretty confident with her.
Nick.
I think the Schifrin train gets back into full force. I think, as you quite rightly say, it'll be icy, it'll be cold. Hopefully she's back to full strength and fitness by then. I'm actually going to tip Schifrin to take her total tally to 95 and do the double in Jasna.
Bosh, bosh. That would be big. That'd be big to do that in Schifrin's home turf. Well, that'd be pretty epic. I mean, great for the stories. Marcel, mate, what do you think?
I think in the GS, Lara Good is gonna get her 41st World Cup win.
Yep.
I've been there multiple times during European Cup races and stuff, and I think it suits her really well. It's not too steep, not too flat, somewhere in the middle where she can really, you know, just don't have to drift at all. And I think that's what she's very good at.
Okie dokie. Then I'm going to go Grenier again. She picked me up 5 points in the last round. I love the way that she rolls up her ski, so smooth in that progression onto the edge. I just think that she will be feeling super confident. Yes, it's quite a different hill to Kranjska-Gora, not quite as technical, but I think she's going to be feeling real good going into that one. So I think she could get the job done. And then slalom. The slalom hill, remind me, Marcel, the bottom there, it's not that steep, is it? It's not a hugely technical run.
No, it's not.
So I wonder if it might be too easy for Michaela. That would be my only thing, because my memory from last year, which is a little hazy on it, there's a long, long flat in the middle, isn't there? And then it rolls over onto this. But I mean, her execution from steeps to flats is, you know, her ability to read what's happening is better than anybody, obviously, pretty much. So, could happen. Do I think Lena could do it again? That sort of smooth style coming onto a flat. Yeah, I'm going to go Durr again. Yeah, I'm going to go Lena Durr again. She's so smooth. Who hasn't gone yet? Ben, have you gone yet?
Not for the slalom, no. I'm going to go a little bit left field based on your description of the hill, so you better not be wrong. I'm going to say based on that and the lack of, I guess, kind of overly complicated training it could hand play into the hands of Paula with the speed she's been showing this year.
Right,
I think that's going to be, if she can hold it together, because we say pretty much every run has got a at least one very hairy moment in it. If she can hold it together, I think that she's going to have a flyer and pick up the win.
That is an epic shout. That is very good. Marcel, is it just you to go then, mate?
Yeah, I'll just go for shift.
All right.
So no one's picked Vlahova at home.
Yeah, no one's gone Vlahova at home.
It's all the pressure.
Because she did win last year, didn't she? I'm sure she won in the slalom there last year.
Was there not the big thing with the how long there was a broken gate and there was a really long course repair?
Oh, yeah.
There was some complaining going on from someone's camp.
Someone standing at the bottom with the timing. It's like, oh, she's gone through.
Yes. Yes. Oh, so yeah, we're in for the absolute classics, the best of the best. Certainly the second most iconic downhill on the tour. Kitzbühel is going to be epic. Nick, you were talking about the weather conditions there at the moment. It is going to get warm and then going to get properly cold. And so it could be absolutely lightning quick. What top speeds do we have in Wengen? 150 clicks?
150.6.
There you go. And that finish straight, if it is absolutely slick, as it's got up to mid to high 140s before. So look out. I mean, imagine if, you know, that'll be Kitzbühel getting that one over on Wengen. They'd be like, bring it for next season. those guys battling. So yeah, epic few races coming in. It's going to be really, really cool. Nick, thank you very much for joining us, mate, taking time out. I know it's late over there, so thank you for that. And boys, thanks again. Are you two here next week?
I feel like I need a holiday.
Yeah, it's about time one of you lot was on holiday.
Up with you on the weekend or not?
Pardon?
It depends on if I'm going to get fed up with you on the weekend.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah, you better be careful, mate. But yeah, gentlemen, I really appreciate your time. Thanks very much. And until next time, bye for now.